Welcome to Ask Peggy About Your Finances, because prosperity is so much more than money. Brought to you by writer, speaker, and certified financial planner, Peggy Dobiak.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. My name is Peggy Dobiak, and I'm a certified financial planner practitioner and a personal finance author. This is a show to help you understand your money, and I've got some great topics today. We're going to look at NVIDIA earnings, what it means, and why you should be careful. We're going to look at some anticipated Fed rate cuts, looking at advisors and new money laundering regulations. And then I'm going to answer the question of when should I take Social Security benefits. So let's get started with the bulls and bears market and economic update. This is for the week ending February 23rd, 2024, and it was another good week in the markets. The Dow was up 1.3%, while the S&P 500 was up 1.66%. The NASDAQ was up 1.4%, and gold was up a little over 1%. Oil dropped about 3 1/3%, and the current price of a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude front month price is $76.57. The 10-year Treasury also dropped 3.3%, and its current rate is 4.251%. The dollar dropped 1/3%, and Bitcoin dropped 0.75%. So overall, it was a good week. Oil's a little bit down. That always makes the gas pump a little bit easier. So, you know, so far, this nice little economic engine keeps chugging along. Huge news this week on the earnings front. NVIDIA, the AI or artificial intelligence stock, is now the third U.S. company that has a closing market value over $2 trillion. And what that means is at the end of the market close, NVIDIA is worth more than $2 trillion. And that was, I think, as of Friday. The other two companies that have done that in the past were Apple and Microsoft. And so, of course, it bumped the whole market. Everything looks really, really good. NVIDIA looks like it's in a very good place right now within AI technology. So why am I offering you a warning on it? Well, the first thing that catches my attention is it came up with this growth rate much, much faster than either Microsoft or Apple was able to do. So it was, let me see here, what do I need to read? It said that it's the quickest ascent according to Dow Jones market data, and Friday is the 175th trading day since NVIDIA reached the $1 trillion mark. So Friday, again, the 23rd, it was 175 days for it to go from $1 trillion valuation to $2 trillion valuation. And anytime anything has a quick rise, I get a little bit concerned. Now, I am not knocking NVIDIA, okay? I don't tell you what to buy and sell. I'm going to say that rapid market ascents always make me a little squeamish. I like slow and steady. I'm incredibly boring these days when it comes to investing. And I just think that anytime you have the hot new stock and everybody's talking about it, it just warrants a little caution. Do I believe AI is here to stay? Yes, absolutely I do. For good and for bad, I think that AI is here to stay. I think it has enormous potential for good. I think it has some potential for bad, but I completely believe that we will, from this point on, have some artificial intelligence that is flavoring how we do business and how we operate in our day-to-day lives. You know, that predictive text on your phone that you've had for several years now is actually just AI. So it isn't necessarily something new and something scary. It's just something that is becoming more and more integrated into our daily lives. Whenever something is first to market, like the first stock to do really, really well, you always need to remember that first to market is not always what lasts in the market. So that the very first computer stock out there was not Microsoft. It was not Apple. In fact, if you're as old as I am, you will remember that you were the cool kid if you had a Commodore computer that you had bought from Radio Shack. Now, I don't know if Radio Shack is completely out of business, but I know there aren't any Radio Shacks any longer in Norman, Oklahoma, and Commodore computers have gone the way of the dodo. So my only suggestion here, and certainly this is not investment advice, I would say it about absolutely any security. Remember that single stocks are always riskier than funds, absolutely always riskier than funds. If you're looking at going into a new technology, potentially tempering it with some other things that aren't quite as hot and flashy might keep you safer. If you do want to buy NVIDIA, and if you and your financial team thinks that's a great decision, I am not going to get in the way of it. But remember that diversification is always your friend. So what I never like to see happen is for somebody to dump everything they have and buy anything that's the new hot trend. So that if something does happen internally within NVIDIA's corporate structure that has absolutely nothing to do with artificial intelligence, you aren't left holding the bag. I'm not going to use the name of the stock, but a number of years ago, there was a stock that was fairly popular, and it was a celebrity stock, and everything looked great with the stock. And people would ask me, what do you think of it? It's like, well, you know, there's hardly any debt on the books. It's an incredibly valuable brand. Many, many consumers like this situation. And then there was an event that, again, I'm not going to go into exactly what the event was, but it was catastrophic to the brand. And so the stock plummeted, and I watched to see how things came out on the other side, and it took years and years before anything really began to work again. So if you waited long enough, would you have ever gotten your money back? I don't think the stocks actually ever returned to its previous high. So the easy answer is no. But remember that if you're in a good economy like we are right now, and the markets are generally trending up, then selling something that's gone down and buying other things that can go up can be very helpful. But I talk to so many people and they say, well, I'm not going to sell this until I get my money back. Well, you may not. So anytime you buy a single stock, if something goes south, you've really got to weigh the situation and decide, do you ride it out? Do you sell it? Do you move on? So just if you're looking at a purchase, any purchase of anything, even a fund, diversification is always good. That's just financial, putting together a financial portfolio 101. Always diversify. Diversify outside of a single sector. So you wouldn't want to buy all of any one sector. And then finally, if things look weird, it might be better to cut your losses and move on to something else that's making money. But again, talk to your financial team. Make sure everything makes sense for you. One other quick thing. Inflation is coming down, and even though the Fed did not cut rates this spring, there's a strong expectation that they will be next summer. John Williams, who is the president of the New York Fed, has said that he thinks that the elevated inflation readings in January were just a bump. According to the rate that the Fed likes to use, which is the Personal Consumption Expenditures, or PCE price index, inflation is now at 2.6%. That is as opposed to back in 2022 when it got as high as 7.1. So things are going better, things are going well, and it looks like potentially we'll see a rate cut later this year.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the legislative update of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And I want to talk about some proposed legislation and talk about the history behind it to combat some information that I'm hearing just all over the place that isn't accurate. So last week, the Treasury Department's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, also known as FIN for financial, C-E-N for Crimes Enforcement Network, is wanting to increase the requirements for investment advisors to not only know the customers that they're working with, but have a better understanding of where the funds that they are investing are coming from. This knowing where money is coming from is designed to help with money laundering problems as well as the financing of terrorism. So basically, these are ways to make sure that investment money that financial advisors are taking and putting in investment accounts hasn't come from illegal activity, hasn't come from money laundering, hasn't come from terrorist activities. And actually, I'm not sure that it's going to make a huge difference in my practice because I already, on my application, have to ask clients where the money came from. Now, it may be that there's going to be some additional questions. It may be that there's going to be some more information. I don't know how this is going to play out. And there's no real guarantee that this is going to pass, but I think there's a very good chance it will. Personally, I think it should, but it also opens the door to conversations and things that I have heard people say. There will be on late night television advertisements about how the government is tracking what you're doing. And they're saying it like it's a new thing, like somehow the current government setup is looking at what you're doing with your money. And it's usually designed to have you buy something through some sort of an investment program or to purchase precious metals or to purchase crypto or to, it always, every ad I've seen has always involved buying a book or buying something. So there's always a sales component to it, at least in what I have seen. But I want to clear something up right here. Yes, it's true that for a transaction over $10,000, the bank can report it to the government and usually does report it to the government. But do you know when that started? That legislation started in 1970. 70, and it's now been going on for 54 years. So there's nothing new. There's nothing scary. There were some additional questions that were added after September 11th. There have been a few things along the way that have tried to strengthen the anti-money laundering legislation and rules, but it all started in 1970, and the reporting of transactions started then. Everything else has just been an add-on to that, and that $10,000 amount has not changed, to the best of my knowledge, since that original legislation was passed. So, are you being spied on? No, you're not. This is something that has to happen to make sure that illegal money from drugs, from organized crime, from petty crime, anything in the world where folks are trying to launder money, we need to be able to catch it. And when people are laundering money, they typically are trying to launder large amounts at a time to get it over with quickly, right? To place the bad money in a whole bunch of good money really quickly so that it all kind of washes together and doesn't get caught. This is just trying to protect people from being victims of cons. Money laundering is a big deal in financial crimes. It's a big deal in Ponzi schemes. It isn't new. It isn't creative. It isn't designed to spy on you. It's designed to catch the bad guys. And right now, that's not the worst idea in the world, just trying to make sure that everybody is operating in the way that they should. And as long as all of that's set up the way it should be, it's a good thing. I'm glad that maybe I have to answer more questions, because if I can play a little bit of a part and help the situation out, I am more than happy to participate.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Plan Your Prosperity segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And today I want to talk about the risk tolerance form that you fill out when you start investing. So a risk tolerance form is designed to help you see how long you have for your investments, what the potential upside and downside return could be at different risk levels, to see what sort of return you need to get, to see what kind of sophistication of an investor you actually are, and also to see what level of risk still allows you to sleep at night. So risk tolerance levels are based mostly around what kind of risk you want to take. And then secondarily, they're looking at timelines. So if you need the money in a year, you probably don't want to be aggressive, right? Because that's not going to be enough time for the market to come back. My risk tolerance questionnaire is a little bit longer than average. I've seen them as short as 5 or 6 questions. I want to give you some things, though. The longer I work with risk, the longer I work with risk tolerance forms, the less satisfied I am with them. Because I believe that the first problem with a risk tolerance profile is sometimes people walk in thinking that there's supposed to be a certain risk level. It isn't so much that they feel that way, it's that they think they should be that way. So for example, a young investor might believe that they have to be aggressive, where an older investor might feel like they have to be conservative. Now, there's no question that time plays a major role in risk tolerance. However, you don't want to be pigeonholed into something. So that if a client is young and just really can't stomach the risk, a moderately aggressive risk tolerance profile that they can stay with may be more effective than an aggressive risk tolerance profile where they bail out the first time the market goes south. Simultaneous to that, although I know that being older means you might want to be more conservative, today, at the age of 65, it isn't unusual to live for 30 years. And a 30-year time horizon might not want to just simply be in CDs. Again, that is a question for you and your financial team. It's also possible that the same person can have two different risk profiles if they have two different financial goals. If you have a child who's 15 going to college in 3 years, that account might have a lower risk tolerance than if you are 40 and needing to save for retirement. In one situation, you have 3 years, and in the other situation, you have decades. So just because you have one risk profile for one goal doesn't mean it's going to apply to everything. Also, risk tolerance isn't static. And I'm going to just say that sentence again. Your risk profile is going to change over time. In fact, sometimes your risk profile can change from day to day. If you've had a really bad day after a really bad week, you may be more pessimistic and you may score lower on a risk tolerance profile than you would most of the time. On the flip side, if you're feeling incredibly optimistic the day you complete it, you may have a higher risk tolerance than you have most of the time. This is why risk conversation should happen regularly with your financial team. And periodically, you ought to take the survey again and make sure it still works. Of course, if you took one when you're 25 and now you're 55, you may just be more conservative because of your age, right? So that's another reason why you might want to look at it. If you're taking a risk tolerance profile at a stressful point in your life, for example, at the time of a divorce or the death of a partner, you are going to score potentially either more aggressive than you are because you think you should, or more conservative than you are because you're so upset. If you are having to make investment decisions, and I know everybody says, oh, wait 6 months. I would say 6 months is the minimum you should wait. I would like to see you do your risk tolerance profile at 6 months, at 12 months, at 18 months, and look at differences. And if you're scoring considerably differently after those three, you might want to continue the process on even as far as 2.5 years. I know right now that sounds like an incredibly long period of time, but trust me, it really isn't. And I want your risk tolerance profile to be accurate. Now, finally, there's a piece that I don't see a lot of people talk about, and that's the comparison of your risk tolerance and its expected market return to your retirement projections. And a lot of times these are happening on two different wavelengths. So if you're just working with someone who helps you with your investment and you're not really doing planning with that person, you may be conservative in your portfolio. And then if on your own, you go out and you do a retirement projection, you may have a different rate of return that you're assuming than you're actually earning. And you've got to be careful that you have what you need and that you're actually getting the rate of return you need to get to make your finances work out. Because otherwise, you could find yourself in a really bad situation that you're not anticipating, where your investment portfolio didn't earn the return because of your risk level that you needed to meet your retirement goals. So take some time, study it. You'll be glad you spent the time.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Ask Peggy segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And I want to let you guys know about an upcoming series that I'm going to be doing with the Sepulpa Public Library. I'm going to do a once a month feature where I'm going to answer financial questions on a Facebook Live Zoom meeting. So it'll be on Facebook. You can find it by following the Sepulpa Public Library. If you're not in the area, that's spelled S-A-P-U-L-P-A. Or you can follow the Peggy Doviak author Facebook page. So that's my writer's Facebook page. We're going to be doing it once a month. We're going to be doing it via Facebook Zoom. And that way we can put it up, let people watch it asynchronously. And we're excited because we had over 300 views of the first one that we did that was very impromptu. So when people log into it, then they can submit questions in the comment section and I'll answer questions just like I do on this show. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'll keep you up on the details as soon as I know a little bit more. So the question today is something I get asked often, which is, Peggy, when should I take Social Security? And like everything else that I say, my answer is it depends, but it depends on some specific things. The first question is, are you still working at the age of 62? Remember that 62 is the youngest you can take your Social Security benefit, and it'll be about 80% of your full retirement benefit. There are ways if you take it at 62 that within a very short period of time you can stop taking it and pay it back and get a higher benefit. But honestly, it's a pain in the neck. I've never successfully seen someone do it. So I wouldn't start taking Social Security unless I was absolutely sure that I wanted to keep taking it. If you're still working, then you will lose some of your Social Security benefit if you earn more than a certain phase out. For this year, that phase out is $22,320 a year. If you earn more than that and you take Social Security, you lose $1 for every $2 of benefit. So you lose half of it. Now, I was entirely too old when I learned that it's not really lost. What they do is they put that dollar back into your big pot of money and it gets dispersed over your lifetime. So you will get it back eventually, but if you're working, unless you're earning less than $22,320, it probably doesn't make sense to take it early. The latest you can take Social Security is 70. So if you're 70, you have to start taking the benefit. They won't allow you to defer it any later than that. But here's the good news. The Senior Citizens Freedom to Work Act allows you, once you're full retirement age, to make as much money as you want and get your full Social Security benefit. So since 70 is above everybody's full retirement age, it ends up not being an issue. Once you're full retirement age, you can take your benefit and you can keep working. Now, if you don't need the benefit at that point, remember it grows at about 8% a year from the age of 72, or I'm sorry, from 62 to 70. So if you take it at 62, you're missing out on that 8% compound growth. Full retirement age is about 80% of that, but then it continues to grow until you're 70. So if you're still working and you're plenty fine on your finances, you might want to wait and not take your Social Security benefit until you're 70. It has a lot to do with expected longevity. It has a lot to do with whether or not you need the money. If you need the money, obviously you should take it. I have people say, "But Peggy, aren't you worried about the benefit going away?" And I have to tell you, I am not. And the reason I'm not is I believe that every politician, regardless of their ideology, loves one thing more than anything else in this world. And that's getting reelected. And because we know that older Americans tend to vote at higher rates than the rest of the population, you know, some particular Senate seating, House seating, president would actually have to do this. It's not theoretical. An absolute discrete body of human beings would have to make Social Security go away. And I don't think they'll do it. I think it sounds great to some people in theory, but in practice, I don't see them all losing their jobs because you know that that would happen. The senior citizens would have a fit. So, am I worried you're going to lose your benefit? No, I'm not. But if you need the money, go ahead and take it. Just remember that you can't take it earlier than 62, and you have to take it by 70.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
You may submit personal finance questions to the Ask Peggy Facebook page and learn more at peggydoviak.com. And remember, prosperity is so much more than money.